Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
So say hey, Willie, tell the cow, and Joe DiMaggio, don't say it ain't so. You know the time is now. Oh, put me in cold. I'm ready to play today. Put me in cold. I'm ready to play today. Look at me.
I'm Glenn Moberg. The sun is out. There's new grass on the field. And today on Route 51, hope springs eternal as we welcome the new baseball season and say goodbye to winter. We'll be talking about the greatest of all games for the next hour. A bit later in the show, after our seventh inning stretch, we'll look at the prospects for the Milwaukee Brewers with regional radio commentator Terry Gehrig, who is also the business manager for People's State Bank in Wausau. But leading off today, we focus on the regional impact of the Northwoods League with Mark McDonald, owner of the Wisconsin Woodchucks, a team that plays in newly renovated but still historic Athletic Park in Wausau, and John Fanta, general manager of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters, a team that plays in historic Witter Field. Also joining us, Brandon Kinnart, the new sports director at WAOW Newsline 9. Brandon, also a former play-by-play announcer for the Northwoods League's Green Bay Bullfrogs. We want to hear from you as well. Do you go to the ball games in Wausau and Wisconsin Rapids? What do you think of the Northwoods League? What do you think of baseball in general and the unique role it plays in uniting generations as America's pastime? You can give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. So welcome, Brandon, Mark, and John. We've got a lot to talk about, and only an hour to do it.
Thanks for having us.
Brandon, you're taking over as sports director at WAOW Newsline 9 with the departure of the very excellent Lauren Majera. Your thoughts on that?
I didn't realize we were going to lead with this, but thank you. I'm very excited. Lauren's done a great job, and I'm excited to pick up where she left off. And about a week, it'll be official, and then we'll get things going.
Well, we understand that you are a former play-by-play announcer for the Northwoods League. How much fun was that?
It was a blast. I wish I could still be doing it every summer, to be honest. I love traveling with the team, being around baseball every day, being around the players, coaches, fans every day. As Mark and John know better than anyone, it's an incredibly fun league to be around, night in, night out. Very minor league-esque atmosphere, more minor league-esque than any other summer collegiate league that you're going to find. Fun to be around it really in full for those two summers, and I'm glad that I have a job now that I can still be around it kind of on a nightly basis, cover it a couple times every week, and be around the players in baseball.
Well, there you go. Mark McDonald, John Fanta, your thoughts on opening day. The Woodchucks are playing the Rafters in Wisconsin Rapids on Tuesday, May 26th. So let's start with you, John.
Yeah, we're really excited. This is going to be our sixth season, it's hard to believe, in Wisconsin Rapids, and we're really excited to host the Woodchucks on opening day. It's become a great rivalry with being so close together in our communities, so near each other. But we're looking forward to a great season, and I'm excited to get going as well.
And Mark McDonald, your opening day is that following Friday.
Yeah, it's exciting. We're very excited about the upcoming season. We've got what we think is a great team put together. At least it looks really good on paper, and we're excited to see them come in and how they can perform. It's going to be very nice this year to not have the stress of opening up a brand new ballpark or newly renovated ballpark. But last year at this time, we were dealing with a lot of weather issues and a lot of stress about getting that getting Athletic Park open.
So. Well, the the Wisconsin Woodchucks, as you mentioned, only recently completed that extensive renovation of Athletic Park. You've got phase two coming up. What can you tell us about that? What do you have planned for the old park?
And I'm sure John will echo my thoughts here, but this is the entertainment business, and you got to keep it fresh. You know, you want to kind of give the fans something new and exciting to come out for every year. So, yes, today we announced our Phase 2 renovation. We're actually going to be having a press conference on it this afternoon, so I'll probably be pretty brief. But it's going to be a $3 million renovation, and we're going to go down the third baseline Athletic Park and basically replace everything, the new bleachers, with 288 additional reserved seats involved, new concession stand with a group outing area on top that will seat 150, and also all new restrooms.
Tell us about the renovation that you did last year for Phase 1. That was an extensive overhaul of not only the ballpark, but the neighborhood around it.
Yeah, Phase 1 was very dramatic because and spectacular in a way because of the change that took place to the entrance to Athletic Park and the front of the stadium. It really changed the look. And that was exciting. It went really well. It was received very well by the fans. Got a lot of nice compliments throughout the year. The response for our new premium seating, the four top tables, the luxury suites, and the reserve seats has been great. And they're selling very well this year.
And John Fanta, do you have any renovations planned for Witter Field? I know a few years ago you put in a new scoreboard and you had some mobile stands. What have you got planned?
We've partnered with the city on a few different projects. First of all, we've repainted the entire main grandstand of the ballpark, so it's got a fresh new feel and a new look going into the year. We also replaced the netting behind home plate, some smaller upgrades that the fans probably won't notice right away, but it's going to be a great upgrade for the future. For them there, also doing a brand new area we just announced last week, the Point Craft River, which is a new group area down the third baseline. It's actually a walk-up area that we have the first ever water-powered bar that will take your drinks down to you along a current river. So it's going to be one of the most unique things I think we've ever seen, and there is no precedent to go off of for creating something like this, but that'll be unique and a fun venue to try out some different craft beers that are offered in the area.
You've got a river running through a bar. Did I hear you right?
That is correct.
And that's never been done before?
Not that we've seen it. A little research trying to find out something to go off of to replicate, and we didn't have much success with that. But we're going to try it out. It's actually in the process right now of getting constructed, and we're hoping to have it done by the middle of May and be able to showcase it prior to the season.
You're going to float beer on this river on little rafts that are going to run down this bar. Is that how it works?
Correct. Yep. There'll be a front rail that will seat approximately 30 to 35 people, and they will receive you're sitting on the front rail, receive a raft going into the evening with a number on it. And they'll zip their raft down a zip line to the main service area where the bartender will take their order and put the beer in the raft and float it back down. The river's actually going two different ways, so it'll be about 15 to 20 people on each side of the service area that will be serviced, and the river flows two different directions. So
Brandon, what do you think of that?
I know what I'm doing when I have a free night in the summer now. That's all I have to say. That is phenomenal.
Yeah. Pretty unique. We're pretty excited to try something new, and like Mark said before, it's all about fun in the league and creating different venues and ventures that people can't get anywhere else.
Brandon, what do you think of the changes that are going on to these teams, the money that they're putting into Athletic Park and Witter Field, and the fact that they're able to do that in the Northwoods League, which, you know, it's not the major leagues. It's not like you've got hundreds of millions of dollars floating around that you can spend.
Yeah, I mean, when I worked in the league, it was 2012 and 2013, and so four years ago almost now. And I'm not on the inside of it like these guys are, but it seems to me now that there's a little bit more money to spend than there was back then, which is great. That's what you want. The league has shown tremendous growth in the last couple of years, expanding, adding a couple of new teams last year. I think there's maybe plans to add some more in the future as well and expand it even more. So it's good to see that a league like this is growing. Well deserved for how hard the Northwoods League has worked for the last 20 plus years now to really brand itself this way and make itself this successful.
What do you think the success, what's the cause of that success, Mark McDonald? It's not the major leagues. It's small town baseball and a lot of people would probably think something like that could fail as well as succeed.
Well, I think a couple of things, and Brandon said it earlier, is that this is a collegiate summer league, but it's really run like a minor league. And I think that attracts a lot of the better athletes from college. They want to really get the experience of what it's going to be like to be in the minor leagues. And so it's a real learning experience for them, and I think the quality of baseball is really, really good. I think the other reason why it's really kind of taken hold is that these teams are community assets. And, you know, I may own the Wisconsin Woodchucks, but I'm really more like a trustee. I think the city of Wausau and the central Wisconsin really owns the Woodchucks, and they believe it's theirs. And I think that's great. I really love the idea that they've taken ownership of the Woodchucks and they are very proud of the Woodchucks. And that's kind of, you know, created a lot of excitement around all these teams. And it's pretty much the same in every city that you go through at the Northwoods League.
And John Fanta, you're owned by a company. Is it Big Top?
Yeah, our ownership group owns four different organizations in the league, the Kenosha Kingfish, Madison Mallards, Green Bay, Bullfrogs, and Rafters. And collectively that entity is branded as Big Top Baseball.
But still, you have to be very closely tied to the community of Wisconsin Rapids. In fact, you have a contract with the city of Wisconsin Rapids.
Yep, every team has a lease agreement with their city, I believe, and we work really closely with the city in each of our markets to do what we do. But I think you know, it's kind of what Mark said, the affordability and the fun, family-friendly entertainment that we offer in each city, I think, and the reputation that the league has gotten over the past 20 years is created that fun, you know, community-oriented thing that each of our cities can get behind and rally behind during the summer. And it is, I mean, there's 126 current big leaguers or people that have played in the big leagues that have went through and passed through the Northwoods League in these cities, and that gives a reputation in itself that's pretty cool and something to grab onto that you can watch these guys play before they get to the next level.
If you just joined us, we're talking to Mark McDonald of the Wisconsin Woodchucks and John Fanta of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters. Brandon Kinnard of Newsline 9, the new sports director, is also with us. And Mark and John are going to be leaving in just about 10 minutes or so. So if you'd like to comment on the Northwoods League, if you'd like to ask them a question about the Woodchucks or the Rafters, this is your opportunity to do it. Our phone number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. You know, some of the nice things about going to a Northwoods League game is that they're easy to get to. And parking is no problem. They're inexpensive. You don't have to spend $200 for a day at the ballpark with the family. You get really close to the action, and the players seem to be really playing for the love of the game and not so much for the money.
Closeness to the game. I like that you mentioned that, because this is a park where you're going to go see high-level baseball no matter which one that you're at. And you're right there. I mean, there are no bad seats at a Northwoods League game. I've been to both Athletic Park and Witterfield, and I can objectively say they're two of my favorite stadiums in the league, especially now with the new renovations at Athletic Park. So, I mean, the way I look at it is you're getting basically almost minor league quality baseball at a very small, intimate ballpark, always fun. And the players, yes, playing it for the love of the game. Part of my favorite, one of my favorite parts of working in the league was being around the players on a daily basis, because these are guys that come from all over the country, California, Texas, Florida, you name it. They come from there, and they're here because they really want to get better, and they want to be in the minors, maybe the majors one day. And these are guys who, I mean, they're at the park at 11 noon some days. They don't leave till after midnight a lot of days. It's just really inspiring to be around players like that, whether you're a broadcaster, an owner, a GM, or a fan. I think it's fun to be around players who really just are truly there because they love it and want to get better.
Now, we have more than 125 Northwoods League players who went up on to play in the major leagues, Mark McDonald.
Yeah, like I said earlier, the quality of baseball is very good, and we're getting the athletes, the baseball players, from the top Division I programs in the country. Some of them actually come here and find that it's a little bit above them. They're not quite ready for it yet, so we're challenging them, and it's good baseball.
Let's just look at this year. St. Cloud Riverbats outfielder Mark Canna is now playing for the Oakland Athletics. Thunder Bay Border Cats pitcher A.J. Shugel is playing for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Lacrosse Loggers pitcher Andrew McCarron is now playing with the Atlanta Braves. And John Fanta, you were telling me earlier you had a chance to see a very young Chris Sale of the Chicago White Sox, one of the best pitchers in the major leagues when he was a Northwoods League player.
Yep, I did. I was with him in 2008. Actually, the McCarron gentleman who was playing for the Braves actually was with me in 2009 as well in lacrosse. So I was with three former big leaguers now in lacrosse in my time there. This is going to my eighth year in the Northwoods League. So it takes a while to see some of the development, and it takes a while to get through the minor leagues. And that's a little bit different than maybe the NFL, where you go right from college to the pros. But there's definitely a progression in baseball, and it does take a few years to see that fruition from all the hard work that they put in.
When you saw a very young Chris Sale, could you tell that there was something special about this young man and that he was destined for greatness?
I vividly remember my GM at the time, still is the GM of the Loggers, Chris Goodell, coming out to the ticket office when I was working there and said, "You got to come into the ballpark." He had struck out, I think, 10 or 11 batters in a game, and the Northwoods League honestly helped him progress as a pitcher. He actually was over the top completely when he was at Florida Gulf Coast, came to the Northwoods League after his freshman season and dropped down to a sidearm angle, and now is still in the mid-90s throwing for the White Sox. So definitely a progression and kind of an evolution of his throwing motion that has taken him to the big leagues.
Yeah, I would add something there. Brandon was pointing this out to me when we came in the room before we went on the air today. Former Wisconsin Woodchuck Kevin Pillar was the top play on the MLB Network last night, and that's the second sort of amazing, I guess you would call it, top 10 type play that he's made this season in the outfield for the Toronto Blue Jays.
And you've got a guy like Max Scherzer too, who pitched in this league. Between Sale and Scherzer, those are two of the probably top five pitchers in the major leagues right now who came through the Northwoods League.
Yep. We got Zobrist played for the Woodchucks as well in the past, so the Woodchucks have had definitely a lot of success with their guys going to the big leagues so far that we've seen.
And John Fanta, fans in Central Wisconsin will be able to see the best of the best because you're hosting the Northwoods League All-Star Game at Witter Field on July 21st.
That is correct. We're really excited to host the game this year. We'll have a home run challenge, an all-star game, the actual game itself, all as part of one ticket price. Single game tickets will go on sale next Friday, so it'll be an exciting time for us here in Wisconsin Rapids, and that's kind of the reason why we're doing all the upgrades that we are doing to our ballpark again this year in conjunction with the city of Wisconsin Rapids.
And this is kind of like the Civil War, right? It's the North Division versus the South Division in the Northwoods League?
Correct. It'll be nine teams from each division that'll be represented here at the ballpark, and it'll be fun for all the fans to see the different uniforms and interact with players that they might not get to see every day throughout the summer.
And this isn't only a Wisconsin league. You've got teams in Iowa, Minnesota, Michigan, and even across the border in Thunder Bay, Canada.
Yeah. Yes, we do. It's an international league. That trip to Thunder Bay is not one of the favorites of the players because it's a long bus ride with a border check in between with passports and everything. And but it gives them a real taste of what it's like to be in the minor leagues. And it's a long trip.
And you guys play Thunder Bay every year, don't you? In the interdivisional.
We play them every year, and we always seem to play them the last game of the season. So it makes it even longer at that point in time.
I never went up there. I would have liked to.
Beautiful. It's beautiful, but it's a long ways around the lake.
Well, I love the names of the teams: the Lacrosse Loggers, the Madison Mallards, the St. Cloud River Bats, the Lakeshore Chinooks, the Green Bay Bullfrogs, the Battle Creek Bombers. That adds to a lot of the appeal of the league, I think. And tell us about your mascots, Woody Woodchuck, and it's Roscoe.
Roscoe P. Raptor.
Roscoe P. Raptor. Why don't you start, John?
Our mascot, I think, just going along with the community aspect, we try to get out as much as we can to different events, parades, going around to our sponsors and kind of livening up their organizations throughout the year and our mascot's grown into, like all, most mascots, just a lovable character around the ballpark and something that the community can identify with as the Raptors.
Yeah, and I think it just goes back to the idea that this is the entertainment business and you're trying to bring something to the ballpark for every fan. And so, you know, Woody really appeals to a lot of the younger fans. Sometimes he scares them a little bit, but you got to, so he's, you know, you got to be careful, you know, how Woody has to be careful how he approaches some of the younger fans. But yeah, he's just an institution in the community. We have Woody's Reading Club. In the winter, he'll, you know, Woody will go out and he can't actually read because mascots don't speak, but he'll go out to readings that we have where one of our employees will go read books and Woody will go along. And it's very well received. They love him.
When my son was 4 years old, Woody picked him up and carried him around the stands and he loved it. I don't know if I should be sharing that with you, Mark, but,
yeah.
But he does lead all the kids out into the outfield and they sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Yes, we don't do that with the new renovation. We don't have the space to do it, but
okay.
Yeah, but that was an old thing. Yeah, and so, but Woody's, yeah, he's very well received.
But you have a lot of promotions, fun events between innings, sumo wrestling, ketchup and mustard races, frisbee tosses, and so on.
Yeah, it's, we generally, I think the strategy is that for the first five innings, you try to put cute kids on the field that make everybody go, wow, that's adorable. And then for the last four innings, you try to put adults out there to embarrass themselves.
Oftentimes they do embarrass themselves.
You know, the Woodchucks have been very successful in the Northwoods League, but a little over 20 years ago, Wausau had a Class A team named the Wausau Timbers, who also played in Athletic Park. They ended up leaving town and moving to Kane County in the Chicago suburbs. Why are the Woodchucks successful while the Timbers were not?
I mean, I don't know a lot about, you know, what happened with the Timbers when they left. I think probably what's the business model is better with the Northwoods League. The collegiate players, the number of games you can play. You can sell 35 games in a city of like Wausau in central Wisconsin. You're not going to sell, you know, 70 games. I think it's just better management, better run team. Clark Eckhoff deserves a lot of credit for that.
I think a part of it too, and you kind of hit on this, is it's solely a summer league. The Northwoods League is minors. Right. You're playing in April and September, and it's tough to get fans out there in Wisconsin weather in April. I mean, we've got nice weather right now, but it could very well be 30 and snowing right now. It's tough to draw fans that way, I think.
And Mark McDonald, Athletic Park is an urban ballpark. It reminds a lot of people of Wrigley Field in Chicago in that sense. That's kind of challenging in some ways because those foul balls do go out into the street and into the yards and even in the playground that you set up. Have you taken steps to address some of those concerns?
Well, it is a baseball field, and, you know, much like if people who build their house next to a golf course, you kind of know what you're getting into. So Athletic Park was in the current location it's in long before any houses were there, and the neighbors kind of built up around it. We're actually putting up a lot more warning signs in the streets so people understand that when they're parking next to a ballpark, their car may get hit. In the neighborhood park, there's going to be new covering over the playground structure, which will be helpful and nice, too, for the kids that are out there playing. It'll give them shade and protection from anything.
And this ballpark has been there for a long time. In fact, you've got a cornerstone that was laid by the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Yeah, it goes back to the 1800s. I mean, we have pictures in our office of ball games being played there in 1912, and next to the field are Model Ts and horse-drawn carriages and kids in knickers. It's an interesting photo. But the wall, which the historic wall, was constructed as part of a WPA project in the Depression, and it was completed in 1939.
And John Fanta, the Rafters have been in Wisconsin Rapids for how many years now?
This is going into our sixth season.
All
the
right.
Minnesota Twins, single-A affiliate, the Rapids Twins, were here until the 1983 season, and then there has been just kind of a lull just with the American Legion and high school teams playing here through 2010 when we started up the franchise. So I think just going off of what Brandon said before, I think it's really hard to sell baseball in central Wisconsin in April and May, and there can be snow on the ground and things like that. And then the three-month season is much more conducive to success than maybe a five-month season is with the minor leagues.
I'm going to ask you two gentlemen one final question. What is special about baseball that sets it apart from other sports? John, you go first.
I think it just brings everybody together. I mean, you come to the ballpark every day. You can see somebody it's just timeless is one great thing about it, but just bringing all ages together for one common cause. You can see a child interacting with the mascot, age two, and you can see 90-year-old man sitting in the stands just enjoying the game as well, and everywhere in between and above and below. So I think it's just the camaraderie that baseball brings together. You don't have to necessarily be a huge baseball fan to enjoy being at the ballpark and interacting with the other fans and just kind of the community sense it brings.
Mark McDonald?
Yeah, I agree with what John said. I would add that it's the time of year, it's summer, pace is a little slower, and the pace of the game, you know, baseball kind of is a relaxing, you know, speed. I think at the minor league level, what is interesting is that there's something for every fan. A lot of our fans are not really baseball aficionados, and they just come for the goofy stuff between innings or the hot dogs or whatever, you know.
Mark McDonald, John Fanta, thanks so much for being with us. Mark of the Wisconsin Woodchucks, John with the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters. When we come back, we're going to talk about Major League Baseball, the Milwaukee Brewers, and broadcasting. We will be joined by Terry Gehring, a regional radio commentator who is also the business manager of People's State Bank in Wausau. But first, it's time for our seventh inning stretch. Here's Harry Carey at Wrigley Field.
Let me hear you.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include the Edward J. Okray Foundation, Bernie's Rock Shop, and St. Mary's University Winona. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Northwind Renewable Energy of Stevens Point, designing and installing solar systems, highly efficient wood boiler systems, and providing deep energy retrofits to buildings. Northwind's project portfolio is available at northwindre.com.
'Cause the fastest, the strongest played shortstop and first. The last ones they picked were the worst. I never needed to ask, it was sealed. I just took up my place in right field. Here in right field, it's easy, you know. You can be awkward, you can be slow, that's why.
It's Peter, Paul, and Mary singing about the position I used to play in Little League, right field, where you can be awkward and slow. We're talking about baseball on Route 51. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to Mark McDonald and John Fanta of the Wisconsin Woodchucks and the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters. We are joined now by Terry Gehring, who is the business banker for People's State Bank. And also, Terry, you've done some radio work with WSAU AM 550 and ESPN 100.5. Tell us about that.
Always enjoyed talking sports. We did a sports talk show for a number of years, talking mainly Packers, but a little bit of everything, and very much a baseball enthusiast, and enjoy talking about the Brewers.
And, Terry, you have been a Brewers season ticket holder for years now.
Mm-hmm.
And we've understand that you've also attended every opening day at Miller Park, and even before that, a number at County Stadium.
The Brewers do a nice job with a 20-game package where you can get mostly weekend games and perhaps take in a couple series or make sure you take in the bobblehead days. So I've done that, and I have been at every Brewer opening day since Miller Park opened in 2001, including this year's 10-0 fiasco.
Well, Miller Park seems to combine the best of both worlds with that retractable roof. You can play indoors when it's cold or raining and outdoors when the sun is shining.
I was to several opening days at the County Stadium where we had snow beneath our feet, and I can tell you that that was no treat at all. Great to go down there. Particularly this year was a beautiful day outside. They didn't open the roof for the game, but you knew it was going to be a good day for baseball.
If you just joined us, we also have Brandon Kinnard, who is the new sports director at WAOW Newsline 9. Brandon, your thoughts on Miller Park and how it ranks out of the ballparks in the major leagues?
It's got to be top 10 at least. There's a lot of polls online that it'll often win as the best ballpark. I think that maybe says more about Brewers fans and how loyal they are than about Miller Park itself, but they've done a great job with that park. The retractable roof certainly helps a lot, and it's got kind of an old-timey feel to it a little bit as well, which is what you want. You want to be able to, you know, get a new-age kind of park, but also baseball is built on its past and kind of keep that America's pastime feel to it, and I think they've done a nice job balancing the two.
And my seats in right field are right next to the kids area at Miller Park. So they're also going after the woodchucks kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You see kids playing on that stuff all the time. And on this past Sunday, lining up for the base run after the game of where they all get to go out in the field.
Well, I want to get into the Brewers in detail. But first, I'd like to talk about the enduring quality of baseball and how it's different from football and other sports. Now, my general manager here, Rick Ryer, is making me run this. my apologies in advance, but here's part of a classic comedy routine by George Carlin, Baseball versus Football.
Baseball is a 19th century pastoral game. Football is a 20th century technological struggle. Baseball is played on a diamond in a park. The baseball park. Football is played on a gridiron in a stadium, sometimes called Soldier Field or War Memorial Stadium. Baseball begins in the spring, the season of new life. Football begins in the fall when everything is dying. In football, you wear a helmet.
In baseball, you wear a cap.
Football is concerned with downs. What down is it?
Baseball is concerned with ups. Who's up? Are you up? I'm not up. He's up.
In football, the specialist comes in to kick.
In baseball, the specialist comes in to relieve someone.
In football, you receive a penalty.
In baseball, you make an error.
Whoops! Football is played in any kind of weather. Rain, sleet, snow, hail, mud. Can't read the numbers on the field. Can't read the yard markers. Can't read the players' numbers. The struggle will continue.
In baseball, if it rains, we don't come out to play. I can't come out to play. It's raining out.
In football, the object is for the quarterback, otherwise known as the field general, to be on target with his aerial assault, riddling the defense by hitting his receivers with deadly accuracy, in spite of the blitz, even if he has to use the shotgun. With short bullet passes and long bombs, he marches his troops into enemy territory, balancing this aerial assault with a sustained ground attack which punches holes in the forward wall of the enemy's defensive line. In baseball, the object is to go home and to be safe. I hope I'll be safe at home. Safe at home.
It's George Carlin with his famous routine, Football versus Baseball. We are talking baseball today with Terry Gehrink, who is a radio commentator and also the business banker for People's State Bank, and Brandon Kinnard, who is with Newsline 9, their new sports director. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to talk baseball with us, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Gentlemen, there's a famous quote, baseball is the way America used to be, football is the way it is now.
Very good, I think. I think that Carlin routine says a lot about the differences between the games because baseball is so much more laid back, which is a lot of times because of just the amount of games they play. We play 162 games. There's not as much importance on one game like there is in football when you play 16. But it's very much laid back, and it's America's pastime. You know, when you step into a stadium, you sometimes feel like you've gone back 50, 60 years. That's the way baseball is. Football is, as he kind of said there, all rush all the time. So big difference between the two.
And the pacing of the game, Terry, some people love it, some people don't.
I think that's very much the case. Radio, I think, is a great game. Baseball is a great game for radio. To lay back and listen to it as kind of a background, to be picking up the game as it goes along, I think it offers a nice opportunity. But some people aren't into it as much and probably don't follow it that way.
And baseball, you're talking about it being a link to the past. It really involves a bond between young boys and their dads, doesn't it? When I was young, my dad used to take me to the old Comiskey Park in Chicago on the South Side, and his father, my grandfather, told me about watching Shoeless Joe Jackson climb an outfield wall to catch a ball that would have been a home run in 1917, which was something because that was the dead ball era. There weren't that many balls that were hit that far. Well, in 1990, I had a chance to take my grandfather to the park, and we sat near the seats that he had for the 1959 World Series. You know, it's a special game in that respect.
Yeah, all you have to do is watch Field of Dreams and see the end where the dad and the son play catch, right? That's a tearjerker every time, and that is a lot of times what the game is about. My dad was probably about 20 years old when the Brewers made the World Series in 82, and I grew up listening to stories of that all the time the same way, too. There is a special bond there.
And I can remember my dad taking me to a doubleheader against the Yankees when the Brewers were in the American League back then. And I've taken my kids to hundreds of games, and it's been a great connection for us.
Do you like the Brewers in the American League or the National League more? They're two different games. You've got the designated hitter in the American League, which allows some players to play who probably wouldn't be able to play because they can't cut it defensively anymore. But in National League play, there's something about having that opposing pitcher in the batter's box facing his counterpart out there on the pitcher's mound.
I have some mixed feelings on that one. I kind of like the additional hitting action that you get from the designated hitter. But at the time the Brewers switched, I think the timing was right. We got to see McGuire. We got to see Sosa, even though it was stained by the steroid issues. The transition has went well, and you just kind of go with it.
And you had a real rivalry in the old days between the Brewers and the White Sox. Now it's the Brewers and the Cubs.
Mm-hmm. The Cubs certainly haven't had the level of performance to make it the rivalry that it could be, but they have some young talent, and I think that's a team on the rise.
What do you guys like? Do you like high-scoring games with a lot of home runs or pitching duels? Brandon, let's start with you.
As a fan, when I'm just sitting there watching, I like to see high-scoring games and a lot of runs. But from my experience as a baseball broadcaster, I loved calling pitchers' duels. There's just something about it. It turns into a battle by the fifth or sixth inning between these two guys on the mound, and it's really unique to the sport of baseball. It's such a one-on-one type of game a lot of times, and mostly it's the pitcher versus the batter. But when you get a good pitcher's duel and there's two really good pitchers going at it, it turns into a battle between the two guys on the mound, even though they never face each other.
And when you're when you're in extra innings or when you're in the ninth inning and it's a one-to-one ball game, you're on the edge of your seat. Every pitch is significant.
Absolutely. And obviously you have a much better chance of the game being close if it's low scoring than it is if it's high scoring.
Terry, what do you think?
I like the action. I like the runs being scored, particularly when it's the Brewers scoring the runs. Once you do get to that point in the fifth or sixth inning when somebody's throwing a no-hitter or something pretty tight, it kind of switches your feeling and your look at the game, and I enjoy those also.
Yeah, the first couple innings can be a lot more exciting when it's a high-scoring game, but I feel like you get better late-inning action when it's a low-scoring pitcher's duel.
Brandon Kinnard of Newsline 9 radio commentator Terry Gehrink. We're talking baseball, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation, that's 1-800-780-9742. We're going to come back and talk about the Brewers in detail. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. Here's Bud and Lou.
Well, who's on first? Yeah. Who? The guy on first. Who? The guy playing first base. Who? The guy on first. Who is on first?
What are you asking me for? I'm asking you.
I'm telling you.
You ain't telling me nothing. I'm asking you who's on first.
That's it.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first base.
That's his name.
That's whose name?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who is on first?
What are you asking me? I'm asking you who's on first.
That's it.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The guy on first.
That's it.
What's the guy's name on first?
Now, what's on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
That's what I'm asking you. Who's on first?
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include the Edward J. Okray Foundation, Bernie's Rock Shop, and St. Mary's University Winona. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at WPR.org/sponsor.
Eggers at the bat, bottom of the 11th inning. Got the whole town listening. Swung on and belted. The words distorted. Joey Cora rounds third. Here comes Grippy. The throw to the plate's not in time. My oh my, the Mariners win it. Yes, fireworks, they lit up that ceiling in the King Dome. We had just made history.
Line that one behind for a base hit. Here comes Joy. Here is Junior at third base. They're going to wave him in. The throw to the plate will be late. The Mariners are going to play for the American League Championship. I don't believe it.
This is a song called My Oh My by Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, and that announcer that you're listening to is the late Dave Niehaus, who announced the Mariners games for many years. And baseball announcers often get identified with their team to the point where they become the face of that team, Terry Gehrig.
I could listen to Bob Uecker all day long. Great storyteller. He's certainly very much probably the most identifiable person with the Brewers. He's taken a few games off this year, which I think is well deserved at his age, but simply a great broadcaster.
And Vin Scully, another great example too. Those are the two that kind of come to mind across baseball. When you think of Bob Uecker, you think of the Brewers. When you think of Vin Scully, you think of the Dodgers. It's going to be a sad day when those two are no longer around calling games every day.
You know, when I lived in Chicago, I listened to Harry Carey first as a White Sox announcer and then as a Cubs announcer, and he started with the St. Louis Cardinals. And he was really different in the sense that he'd often criticize his team. I mean, very vocally, which is something that had never been done before. You know, the relief pitcher is in there pitching poorly, and he'll shout, get him out of there, you know. The Sox had a guy named Greg Luzinski who was a big ball player, and he had an infield ball that a lot of people could have beaten out. He was out at first, and Harry screams, that guy just ran down the baseline like a dead horse, you know. So I think the announcers really do bring the fans into the game who might not normally have been brought into the game, and once they're hooked, they're hooked.
It's a good way to identify with the fans. I've read a lot about what Carey did, and he was really the first person to do that, to criticize the team on the air, and it made it more identifiable for fans because you're at the ballpark, you say things like that, you know, and that's what it's all about, I think, is creating an enjoyable and identifiable broadcast for your listeners.
Well, why don't we talk about the Milwaukee Brewers? They're off to a rough start, Terry.
They are indeed. I've gotten to go to two games, and they lost 10-0 and 10-2 in those two appearances. The pitching seems to not quite have been there. The hitting hasn't quite taken off. I think this is a little bit of a 500 team this year, and we're going to have some tough stretches along the way.
Outfielder Carlos Gomez had to leave with a hamstring injury last night. How serious is that?
Sounds like it doesn't sound like it's a long-term kind of thing, but you hate a guy with that kind of speed to be dealing with a hamstring problem.
Yeah, his legs are his livelihood, so right. That's the problem with a guy like Gomez. If it's an arm injury, you don't worry as much, but this can linger throughout the season. He's definitely not playing today. But from what I've heard, it's probably not a DL stint or anything like that, just day to day.
Some people think he could win the MVP. What do you think?
He played at a high level in the first half of the season, especially last year. I think he's got borderline MVP talent, but the way the team's going right now, I don't think that's likely this year.
You need the team to finish up there in the division for somebody to get that designation, usually. Willie Peralta gave up 4 runs on 10 hits in just 5 innings yesterday. Not a good outing.
I didn't think it was a terrible outing for him. The Brewers were in the game. They stranded 11 guys on base last night. But Willie Peralta, I think, won 17 games last year and certainly was a bright spot, and you needed a little bit more from him in that kind of situation.
What do you think of the other Brewers pitching? Let's start with the starters.
Jimmy Nelson has been the bright spot. He's had the one start and another one coming up, what, day after next. Found a curveball, and that really set things down for him. So that looked good. I think Loesch and Garza are going to come back okay. Fiers is kind of the enigma. He strikes out a lot of guys, didn't have a particularly good outing this last time, but he had a great stretch last year.
Yeah, you don't really know what to expect from him because he's had two stretches like that now last year, and I think it was 2010. 2010 he came in and kind of had a stretch like that. He seems like the kind of guy to me who once hitters get a scouting report on him, they might be able to figure him out a little bit. But we'll see if he gets a turnaround. He starts this afternoon. I like what you said about Nelson. I think he's going to be good in the future, a solid third or fourth starter maybe. And you've got the veterans, Lotion, Garza. And Peralta's the guy who eventually really is going to have to step up because he's the young ace on this team. And sooner rather than later, he's going to be the number one guy.
Let's talk about relief pitching.
K-Rod, I think, is the curiosity here. He's had a great track record, but he gives up a lot of home runs, and he's already done that to blow a game so far this year. I think a lot of their younger arms, the Will Smiths, the Neil Kotz being new to the bullpen, are going to be big time, but the bullpen, in my mind, is going to hinge on how well K-Rod does.
I was surprised when they signed him to a two-year contract. That's what he wanted. That's probably the only way they were going to get him back, so he's here for a couple of years now. It's the first time they've done that in a while. It seems like they always bring him back on a one-year deal. But, yeah, they've certainly done a lot to stock up that bullpen, and on paper it should be one of the best in the National League with K-Rod, you know, maybe not in his prime anymore, but one of the top closers in the history of the game. A guy like Jonathan Broxton, who has closed in the past, and then those good left-handed arms like Will Smith, who was great for a while last year. Kotz looked good last night, so I think it'll get settled down and be a good pen.
What do you think of the new first baseman, Adam Lind?
He's been off to a super start. Mm-hmm. He's probably been the only guy that's been hitting consistently well starting out. So I think particularly when you look at the hole the Brewers had last year with a couple of really journeymen in Overbay and Reynolds in there, it's a huge improvement.
I think the problem with Lind is he doesn't hit lefties well, and you can start him against righties and start someone else against lefties, but last night he was up in a big spot late in the game, and Matheny made a switch, brought a lefty in, and they struck Lind out. So I think that's your problem is he going to be able to make situational hits late in games when he's matched up against the left-hander?
And the bench isn't real deep with pinch hitters to fill in there.
Their shortstop, Segura, had some injuries last year. What do you think is going to happen with him? Do you think he's going to play true to form this year?
Well, not only injuries, but he had that tragic situation halfway through the year, too, with his son passing away, and I know that really set him back mentally. Obviously, rightfully so, how does it not? But he seems to be right this year based on everything that I'm reading and seeing, and he's gotten off to a pretty good start. He struggled on Monday a little bit with some throws from shortstop, but he'll get that figured out. He's a pretty good defensive player, and as long as he hits, you know, 270, 280, I think that's what you're going to get from a guy like that.
I thought that was classic when they beat the Cardinals on Cardinal opening day, and yeah. Segura had a couple of bad throws, and then he had to come up with a good one toward the end, yep. and he made it happen. I think it was the last play of the game. Yes, that's right.
Now, he's from the Dominican Republic. We've got a history of a lot of great players, particularly shortstops from Latin America.
Yeah, and there's no reason he can't follow kind of in that trend. The Brewers are really delving into that Latin American talent more and more lately. They've signed some amateur free agents in the last years who are still in the minors at this point, and we don't know what we're going to get from them yet. But, you know, Segura, Gomez, Gerardo Parra, players like that, that area is becoming, and has been for years, a major part of Major League Baseball. And with guys like Segura and Gomez and all of that, I think the Brewers are really showcasing the talent that that area of the world has.
Let's play Brewers trivia real quick. Who was the first Brewers player to drive in 7 runs in 1 game? Was it John Jaha, Ted Kubiak, Ryan Braun, or Jeremy Burnett?
Do we buzz in? Not that it matters because I'm not sure, but...
I seem to remember Kubiak having done that way back when, Danny Walton area.
That is correct, Terry. Which Brewers manager was the first to win 500 games with the franchise? Phil Garner, Harvey Keene, Ned Yost, or Tom Treblehorn?
I just want to say, Keene didn't manage for very long, did he? Not Treblehorn would be my guess.
And I'll go Garner.
Garner is right, Terry. Who was the first designated hitter in Brewers history? Paul Molitor, David Sveam? Am I pronouncing that right?
Dale Swaim?
Swaim. Okay, Ollie Brown or Greg Vaughn?
I'm going to go Ollie Brown.
You are right, Terry. And who was the first Brewers player to lead the league in home runs? Was it Gorman Thomas, Prince Fielder, Rob Deere, or Cecil Cooper?
I don't think Fielder ever did he?
Gorman Thomas tied 1 year.
Terry, you're correct.
These are all before my
Gorman
time.
Thomas.
thanks for putting them down the middle for me, Glenn.
Thanks, guys. We are all out of time. It went much too quickly. How do you think the Brewers are going to finish this year, Terry?
Last year, they started out much better than what I anticipated and just couldn't get her done. Right now, I'm thinking it's a 500 team.
Yeah, I don't think they're a playoff team. I don't think they're a 100-loss team either, but I hope they can hang around 500. We'll see, but the start they've gotten off to right now, it's not looking too bright.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you out at the ballpark. We want to thank today's guests, Brandon Kinnard, sports director at WAOW Newsline 9, Terry Gehring, radio commentator and business banker at People's State Bank of Wausau, also Mark McDonald of the Woodchucks, John Fanta of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters. The Woodchucks face the Rafters on opening day, Tuesday, May 26th, at historic Witter Field in Wisconsin Rapids. The Woodchucks' home opener at Athletic Park is Friday, May 29th. The All-Star Game takes place at Witter Field, July 21st. You can find out more about the Woodchucks at woodchucks.com, and you can find out more about the Rafters at raftersbaseball.com. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritker, and our show producer, Kylie Russell. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music and audio segments today by John Fogerty, Harry Carey, the soundtrack to The Natural, Peter, Paul, and Mary, George Carlin, Abbott and Costello, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, Dave Niehaus, and the Leonard Lothan Band. Next week on Route 51, it's back to politics as we talk about the ongoing debate over Governor Walker's budget proposal. You will hear from a Republican and a Democrat at this time next Thursday. If you missed part of the show, you can hear it again Friday night at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau or listen online at wpr.org/Route 51. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.